On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We have come to the end of a very strange and sort of harum-scarum week. And I guess that's a good thing. Maybe next week we can try to get things back to normal, recalling, of course, that normal is little more than a setting on a dryer. Thank you, Peter Gottbold. It is Friday on the front porch on the Horn, and it's a beautiful day outside. I guess we can take down the infrared heaters and the plastic sheet screening off the porch and yeah, just come on up and kick your feet back and, well, grab that old jug with the corn cob stopper and just take a good pull if you want to. What do you say? Absolutely. Amen. Sweet Jesus. Sweet tea and lemonade for those of you who don't partake of the hard stuff. And we'll just kick back and relax a little bit and conversate and cuss and fuss and carry on. And maybe lighten things up a little bit from what they have heretofore been. That'd be all right? Good. So, show of hands, because this is just like Romper Room, and I can see out into the virtual world. How many of you checked out the lecture by India Geronimo last night? Well, those of you who didn't need to, it should be up on whiterosesociety.org, my archive by now. Just click on Bob Kincaid under whiterosesociety.org. It'll take you right there. It was brief, to say the least. It was a short lecture. But sometimes, as the bard noted, brevity is the soul of wit. And by that measure, it was a right witty piece. Witty not in terms of being funny, but witty in terms of showing intellect and advancing much-needed information in the face of an onslaught against the 14th Amendment. If you listened to Ms. India Geronimo's lecture from West Virginia State University last night, you learned things about the 14th Amendment that I am willing to bet you did not know. And having said that, I will urge you who did not hear it to go and download it or go and view the video at the Horn's Ustream channel. Both are available, of course, free of charge as ever. And for your downloading, your podcasting, and your further disseminating pleasure for the discriminating radio listener. One of the things that I wish had happened last night is that there would have been an in-house Q&A. Instead, there was a bit of a reception outside. That's where the questions went down. And so after Horn intern Junior Grade Ferg and I had torn down the broadcast rig, with which we have become fairly competent after several instances of working together, the young man is actually learning a skill. I don't know, I think maybe the next step will be to send him to Australia for maybe 3 months or so that he can intern under the watchful eye of Horn chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, host, and jack of all trades, John Fox. Because God knows he could learn, he could learn why things happen. What he learns from me is, son, turn this knob. Son, don't turn that knob. Put the cable here, son. No, don't put the cable there, son. That kind of thing. From John, he would learn why things work the way they work. Maybe it's time. I don't know. Maybe it's time for Horn junior intern junior grade boot camp. Who knows? But after we were done tearing things down, I had a brief conversation with Ms. Geronimo about the 14th Amendment, and I asked a question that I think is pertinent. And frankly, being that the right-wingers, the birthers, deathers, tenthers, 14thers, booger eaters, oatmeal dribblers, house helmet wearers, on the one hand, they seem quite stupid, and I've got evidence of that here in just a few minutes as we address ourselves to some of the more silly and arcane elements of the news. While sometimes they seem downright stupid, other times they look to me crazy like a fox. And you know what I mean by that. That there is more at work than meets the eye when it comes to their machinations. And the 14th Amendment is one of those places. Because not only with the 14th, by striking down the 14th Amendment, could the right wing effectively create a class of citizenship and therefore a slippery slope and put the camel's nose under the tent and yada, 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 on the way to making sure that troublesome people like you and I could have our citizenship challenged for one reason or another. Not only could they do that, they could also, by virtue of certain rulings, forever foreclose calls for basic human rights by the gay community in the United States. And at the risk of sounding cliched, I have a lot of gay friends. There are a number of folks who happen to be gay whom I can say enjoy the actual love and admiration of this family of ours. One of them, at last point, is sick and in the hospital right now. And she is a dear friend of yours and mine as well. Send your warmest thoughts out, please, to our friend Maura in New Jersey. I got a note telling me that she had been hospitalized with a bout of pneumonia, and that she, while she would be incommunicado for some time, that she would also be back as quickly as possible. So send your warmest and kindest thoughts toward Maura. But when I, the point is that when I see assaults on people in my nation, our nation, it is difficult not to attach those assaults to individuals whom we know, respect, and love. And so when I walked up to Ms. Geronimo last night, I first said, well, you know, gosh, I wish it had been longer. And I wish we could have had more of an interchange, more of an exchange of ideas, because that's how we liberals process things. We don't take marching orders and move on. If you listen to the lecture, you'll notice that she did not. She basically kept herself strictly to the facts and got all Joe Friday about it and did not issue any marching orders. She merely talked about why the 14th Amendment was important and is important. But I asked her, because she is a real live, genuine, honest-to-goodness legal scholar. She went to real respectable law schools and stuff. Not like me going to Harvard on the Mon. That's one of our little nicknames for West Virginia University, Harvard on the Mon. You know why the Monongahela River flows north? Pitt sucks! Okay, enough. Enough of the collegiate rah-rah. No. No, I asked her. What the 14th Amendment, if the 14th Amendment is what it says it is, if people are entitled to due process of law and equal protection of the laws, why there has not been some broad blanket statement that the 14th Amendment is available to gay people. And And the answer came that, frankly, she did not know. And that, and I'm sure she keeps up with the scholarship much more than I do, that in fact that was a hotly contested corner of legal scholarship, whether or not gay people are actually American enough to warrant the protection of the 14th Amendment, whether the laws of this nation must be brought into line to make sure that they are equally applied to each and every American, regardless of their sexual orientation, or whether or not it's okay to have a sort of Plessy-style gender ghetto in which separate but equal accommodations may be afforded America's gay community. Because that's what, that's why I support marriage equality. Because this BS of civil unions, well, you know, we can't have any marriage. I mean, you know, with a pair of grooms or a pair of brides on top of a wedding cake or a church or anything, we can't have that. But we could have civil unions. Bullshit, he said to Robin, and he turned and walked away. That's Plessy-style ghettoization of an entire segment of the American population. That is separate but equal. Well, you'll have all the same rights as a married person. Well, then why aren't they married? Well, that's for straight people. Bull. Bull, 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 bull. When you have to make that argument, you know that you've wandered off into Plessy land. So maybe somewhere down the road that might be an interesting inquiry to make on further consideration. And of course, to be fair, it was not the gravamen of her presentation. In the main, Ms. Geronimo expressed and laid out the history and the whys and wherefores of the creation of the 14th Amendment, and then the white resistance to its application, which in turn led to the rise of the civil rights movement, such that we now find ourselves in a country in which the central question, because of the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the 14thers and the booger eaters, is a question of whether or not folks of slightly less brown skin can also have equal protection of the law, even if they have a vowel on the end of their last name. You'd be surprised the number of people who would answer that question. Well, hell no. Them Mexicans. 14th Amendment don't apply no Mexican. Constitution's only for Americans, not Mexicans. Even if, bear in mind, the American economy chugs and lurches along on the backs of those very same Mexicans and would virtually collapse without them. You see, if you deny 14th Amendment protections to one's most fragile classes, and oh yes, this is a class-based society, just because we don't have lords and earls and marquises and dukes and so forth doesn't mean we are not a class-based society, because we most assuredly are. But if you allow society to deny rights to one group while holding them forth for another, well, you're on your way to creating a society that is driven by its helots, if you want to use ancient Spartan history, or its fellahin, if you want to use ancient to modern Egyptian history. Well, see, Lottie, there you go. Lottie in the chat room, our chat room moderator. Where in the Constitution does it specify that it only applies to citizens? It doesn't. You can't falsely imprison, for instance, an undocumented immigrant just because you want to, or just because you happen to have driven your Winnebago with your Pennsylvania license plates on it since you moved to Arizona. You've driven it down to the border and you're sitting there with your rifle gun on your lap on your folding out lounge chair there in the sand. In the scrub of the desert, sitting there, watching for them illegal aliens going to come across and make America fall. Because you're a patriot. No, not really. So, anyway, wow, how did I get there? In the main, by suggesting that the brief lecture is very much well worth your time. And if you have not heard it or viewed it, that you would do yourself a favor by doing so. A little housekeeping. I went and did the actual add-em-up math before the show started. I'll get this out of the way. It is the 15th day of April, and we are halfway through April, and as far as April's fundraising is concerned, we are just over halfway to the halfway mark. In other words, we are about $625 away from making our fundraising goal for the month of, for the first half of the month of April. This is, you know, these surroundings sort of look a lot more familiar to me. We had some considerable good fortune in January, February, and March. In our fundraising efforts, and didn't wind up in a hole the first 3 months. Well, this is the hole. This is one of those where you got to look up to see down. Because at this rate, we're gonna finish April in a very, very bad way. We are at present, around $650, where as of today, we should be at $1,250. Disturbing, isn't it? Yeah, it's because that's how we pay bills. That's how this continues. Now, the positive side of that is that it just means that we need about 65 people to contribute $10 apiece this evening. And then, bang, we'll be in good shape. 65 people, $10 apiece. Thank you very much for jumping in right then and right there. So, 64 people. Thank you, Stephen. So that's the fundraising status for the end of the first half of April. Basically, we did fundraising for we raised enough funds for the first week in 2 weeks. Yeah. Let's see where to go, where to begin the program. Since we sort of started talking about the 14th Amendment and the civil rights struggle. It's kind of hard not to go immediately to Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum. You know that he announced that he will begin fundraising for his presidential campaign yesterday. And you know that he has, I assume by now, you know that he has a slogan. He wants to make America, America again. Yes, he wants to make America, America again. I read that and I thought, wait a minute. That rings a bell. And it did for a whole lot of liberal commentators out there. because we're, I guess, poetry people. And it immediately put us in mind of where that phrase came from. It's a poem. Let America be America again. A brilliant poem by Langston Hughes that says, let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great strong land of love where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free. Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark? And who are you that draws your veil across the stars? I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery's scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man, full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient, endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the men, or of take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer, bondsman to the soil. I am the worker sold to the machine. I am the Negro, servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean, hungry yet today, despite that dream, beaten yet today. Oh, pioneers, I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker bartered through the years. Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream in the old world while still a serf of kings, who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true, that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turned, that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home. For I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore and Poland's plain and England's grassy lee, and torn from black Africa's strand, I came to build a homeland of the free. The free? Who said the free? Not me? Surely not me? The millions on relief today, the millions shot down when we strike, the millions who have nothing for our pay, for all the dreams we've dreamed and all the songs we've sung and all the hopes we've held and all the flags we've hung, the millions who have nothing for our pay except the dream that's almost dead today. Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet, and yet must be, the land where every man is free, the land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain, must bring back our mighty dream again. Sure, call me any ugly name you choose. The steel of freedom does not stain. From those who live like leeches on the people's lives, we must take back our land again, America. Oh, yes, I say it plain. America never was America to me. And yet I swear this oath, America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we, the people, must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains, and the endless plain. All the stretch of these great green states, and make America, America again. Do you remember back when the Ronald Reagan campaign, if you're of a certain age, was running around playing Born in the USA, you know, Bruce Springsteen? And all the goddamn dumb little Republicans just poking their Reagan signs up and down. Oh, Marlene, it makes me feel so patriotic to hear that Born in the USA song. Remember that? Well, just as Rick Santorum, he of the frothy mixture, had no idea, whose poem and what the topic was that he was bogarting in his vain and fetus-frenzied dream of ultimate power in the White House. Just as Rick Santorum had no idea about that, so too the repiglickens of Ronald Reagan's era had no idea that Born in the USA was not a patriotic anthem, that it was, in fact, rather grim. But being as they are repiglickens, and quite frequently not the sharpest knives in the drawer nor the brightest bulb in the socket, the repiglickens just heard the martial strains of the music and said, "Hoo-wee!" By the same token, the Santorum people said, "What? Make America America again? By God, we're going to take it back, ain't we? That's what we've been saying these last two and a half years while that one's been the president. We're going to take our country back." And consequently, Make America America Again has been co-opted and attempted to be transformed by the right wing into a screed against a brown man in the White House. "We're going to take our country back. We're going to make America America again. By God." You know, a few minutes ago, in talking about the 14th Amendment, I mentioned the gay community. And Langston Hughes, who wrote Let America Be America Again, he was the poet laureate of the Harlem Renaissance, that beautiful flowering of arts and letters that gave us such a profundity, such a wealth of arts and letters. He did not confine his liberalism along narrow lines, for he spoke out against the torment that the gay community, whom Rick Santorum has compared to dogs in the street, he spoke out against the torment of the gay community. Detectives from the Vice Squad with weary, sadistic eyes spotting fairies. Degenerates, some folks say. But God, nature, or somebody made them that way. Police lady or lesbian over there? Where? It's called Cafe 3 AM by Langston Hughes. And it's all lost on Rick's Sanctum Santorum. He of the frothy mixture. Well, bless his heart, it didn't take long for Lee Fong to Think Progress. I think that guy's like got a superhero power. He's everywhere. for Li Fang to catch up with Rick Sanctum Santorum. This is an exchange for the ages.
Today you unveiled your new campaign slogan, Fighting to Make America America Again. But was it intentional that this line was borrowed from the pro-union poem by the gay poet Langston Hughes?
No, because I had nothing to do with that. So.
Okay, all right, thanks. Wait, I mean, did you have a clarification there? I mean, it was just a coincidence?
Yeah, I didn't know that, and the folks who worked on that slogan for me didn't inform me that that's where it came from, if in fact it came from that.
Do you like Langston Hughes? Is he a favorite poet?
I've read some of his poems. I'm not a big poetry guy, so I can't say I have a favorite poet, sorry.
All right, thanks.
Uh-oh. Oh. Widow Wick Santorum, I'm feeling a little bit uncomfortable there, don't you think? Yeah, me too. What was that? What was that? There was a line there. Yeah. This is just too much. That line, right at the end. Let's see if we can get back to it. What's that, Rick? You're not what?
That's where it came from. If in fact it came from that.
Do you like Langston Hughes? Is he a favorite poet?
I've read some of his poems. I'm not a big poetry guy, so I can't say I have a favorite poet. Sorry.
All right, thanks.
Not a big poetry guy, the Rick Santorum. Can anybody write a parody of this that involves the phrase frothy mixture? He's strictly heterosexual, I swear.
Thank you.
But what do you say about the not poetry guy? Rick Santorum, Brick or some such a weird. I mean, just my God, if a liberal or an atheist or something did that, their children would be taken out of their custody before they could say Flying Spaghetti Monster. The entire reason for Rick Santorum's being is as a conduit for hate and intolerance. And it disgusts me. Rick Santorum personally disgusts me more than the frothy mixture which his name now means. One need only Google the word Santorum to understand the constant references to frothy mixture. I think it was Dan Savage, wasn't it? It was Dan Savage who held a contest to take away Rick Santorum's name from him. Because Rick Santorum is such a hateful jackass that he deserved it. So even though he's running for president now on the Repiglickin', as a Repiglickin' contender for the nomination, to this day, if you Google Rick Santorum, well, here, let's do it just for fun. I'll be damned. The Rick Santorum, the little wing nuts have been busy. The Wikipedia entry comes up first on Google now. But that's okay. Santorum, sexual neologism, Wikipedia, comes up second. Looks like time for Dan Savage to get busy again. Well, bless my soul, this gets frustrating. Okay, stream's back. Everything's all better. Thanks, Jan. Back now. Email rolling in from Ron in Raleigh. Bob, recently it was shown that the people of Mississippi thought that interracial marriage was not looked upon in high regard. What percentage of those people also find gay marriage hold them in the same disregard? Just wondering. Oh, Jesus, it was 42%, including black folks in Mississippi who wanted interracial marriage banned. And you can only imagine that in a place like Mississippi, the desire to keep gay couples from being able to buy china or have monogrammed bathroom towels that, you know, it's the kind that you don't really use when you visit the house. You know, they're too pretty. Is probably somewhere approaching mathematical absolute. Nah, I'd say it's probably 80% in a benighted place like Mississippi. By the way, a quick thank you. In just the course of the last few minutes, 13 out of the 65 spots needed to be taken up in the nifty, thrifty 250 have been filled. And they have been filled the 4 slots at a pop and 2 slots at a pop and 1 slot at a pop. And thank you very, very much. Thank you. It really does make it possible to continue doing this sort of thing. And after in excess of 8 years in total doing this, I really don't want to stop and go to work for Walmart. So just saying thank you. Thank you very much. Quick word in from our buddy Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist. Hey, Bob and crew. Just had to send in my geek knowledge on the role of homosexuality of Homo sapiens in simple societies. In a hunter-gatherer and maybe even a more complex society such as ancient Greece, a gay male child was an indicator of a fertile female. Pay attention, there will be a quiz on Friday. Oh, wait, this is Friday. Well, next Friday. In a hunter-gatherer and maybe even a more complex society such as ancient Greece, a gay male child was an indicator of a fertile female. Whether folks knew this explicitly or not, our human hormones know this. Most gay males are the second or third child from a female. Furthermore, due to things like hunting accidents and wars, a gay child is an indicator that there may be an available and fertile woman. Contrary to conservo pigs that believe homosexuality is a social negative, it actually helps males to locate females capable of reproduction. Whew. Thanks, Joe. See what happens when you, but that's what we do, us liberals, progressives, decent people, whatever you care to call us. We use our brains. The right wing uses their amygdalas. You know, I thought Princess Amygdala was real pretty. Never mind. Stop that, Bob. Friday on the front porch goes only so far. But it's true. We do use our brains. And the right wing really does use its amygdala. Because everything, every idea the right wing has ever had has been born, is born, will be born of fear and ignorance. And fear and ignorance... They've just got one of those great big 100-foot-tall neon signs blinking by the interstate there. Amygdala, 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 because that's the home of it in the human being. But see, the problem is you can't talk about things like hunter-gatherer society or thousands and thousands of years ago. No, you can't talk about that around a pig licking because they go into a plumb frenzy. Jesus, the state of Tennessee is now trying to ex post facto turn Albert Einstein into a Christian. I offer this for your delectation. Or annoyance, as the case may be. Now, this is a debate, a discussion in the Tennessee state legislature, which is dominated by dead from the neck up right-wing repiglickens who believe that Adam and Eve rode to church on Sunday on a goddamn dinosaur. Just last week, the House of Representatives in Tennessee voted 70 to 23, more than, 3-1, in favor of a bill that insists that Tennessee children be taught the controversy about biological evolution, the chemical origins of life, global warming, and human cloning. I guess the human cloning was in there just sort of as a window dressing, right? 70 to 23. So, you got to hear this. This is from the debate on that particular piece of legislation. Now, you know the story of, for instance, Socrates. If you read The Symposium by Plato, it is a discourse, a dialogue on the nature of love. And there's all kinds of goofy crap in it about once upon a time we all have four legs and four arms and yada, yada, yada. It's kind of a parable, you know, like Jesus used 300 years later. But it's set in this drinking party after a theatrical performance, and young Alcibiades comes to the drinking party and makes passes at Socrates, which Socrates is not at all happy about. But anyway, in the course of the symposium, Socrates proposes that the highest form of love is to love one's enemy. Now, 300 or so years later, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter who lived in a Hellenized Palestine and may very well have heard elements of the symposium, bogarted the idea and was given credit for having transformed the world with love thine enemies. The early church fathers, however, were a little more schooled in Plato than, say, your average snake handling Pentecostal, and they realized it was a problem, so they declared that by the same sort of miracle that turns crackers into Jesus meat in your belly, that Socrates was a homo Christianicus naturaliter, a naturally Christian man. He was Christian before Christian was Christian. Christian before Christian was cool. All because of that love your enemies business. Well, not at all satisfied with leaving all the fun to the early Christian fathers. They did something very similar that you were about to hear. They did something very similar in the Tennessee House. Only this time, instead of turning a Greek into a convert of a Jewish day laborer, they're going to turn a German Jew into... Oh, dear. Just listen.
There's one thing that everyone in this room could agree on, and that would be that Albert Einstein was a critical thinker. He was a scientist. I think we could probably agree that Albert Einstein was smart.
Jesus Christ, this sounds like the beginning of an Andy Griffith speech. If there's one thing everybody in this room can agree to, it's that Albert Einstein was a critical thinker. He's a critical thinker, that Albert Einstein. He's all the time a thinking and criticizing things. You know what? You know who I feel sorry for? Friar Lawrence. Oh, Friar Lawrence had it bad. And I said, give me another one of them big orange.
Harder than any of our science teachers in our high schools or colleges. I agree that Albert Einstein was smarter than any of our science teachers in our high schools or colleges. And Albert Einstein said...
God knows he was smarter than you, Jasper.
...that a little knowledge would turn your head...
Oh, wait, I done talked over the good part.
A little knowledge would turn your head...
Missed it again, sorry. Let's go back to where he's smarter than all the science teachers.
I agree that Albert Einstein was smarter than any of our science teachers in our high schools or colleges. And Albert Einstein said that a little knowledge would turn your head toward atheism, while a broader knowledge would turn your head towards Christianity. Now I want to quote one other person, Thomas Sowell. In my opinion, the smartest man in America today. I've read him for 20 years. He's a genius, and he is a critical thinker.
And he's read him for 20 years, and he's only on page 12.
Colleges and high school, do we spend so much time arguing two theories, the theory of creationism and the theory of evolution, when neither side can prove, without a doubt, that they're right? When there are so many cold, hard facts that our children need to know that we could be spending that time teaching them. So... if I was a teacher, I would teach them both as theories and let the child, as he grows up, make up his own mind. And I'd spend my time teaching cold, hard facts like 2 and 2 is 4 and pi r squared.
But you know what? That's Representative Frank Nicely of Strawberry Plain, Tennessee. No, really. Apparently there's a place in Tennessee called Strawberry Plain. I wonder if it's anything like Roxy Music's Virginia Plain. But well, never mind. No, Representative Frank Nicely, who thinks Thomas Sowell's the smartest man in America today, he wants to teach concrete hard things to... Oh, dear, I've got a hard thing. We'll never stop it, Bob. He wants to teach concrete hard things to our school children. I wonder if literature... is one of those history. I wonder if those are two of those concrete hard things Representative Nicely would like to teach to our little children. Because, well, let's go back here for a minute. I screwed it up a couple of times. I'll get it right this time for sure.
In our high schools or colleges. And Albert Einstein said that a little knowledge would turn your head toward atheism, while a broader knowledge would turn your head towards Christianity.
What's that? A knowledge of broads? No, stop it, Bob. Okay, so we've got there were no words minced that was offered as sure enough. No, really, Albert Einstein done said, a little knowledge would turn your head toward atheism, while a broader knowledge would turn your head toward Christianity. Right? She said it. Right? Yeah, I thought so. You know how it is with these repiglicks, and sometimes you don't even know if you can trust your own ears. Sometimes you hear him say one thing, and you think the song is the big old jet airliner, but your ears hear Bingo Jet Had a Light On. You know what? This is another one of those moments. I want to end the show tonight, about 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Holler, Agnes, pack a bag. And she, one of her favorite movies is Reds, and she'll bring this little ditty bag in to me, and she'll say, your taxi's waiting, Jack. No, if I hollered Agnes, pack a bag, she'd look at me, pack this. And just get in the rusty red pickup truck and use the Google Smart app or whatever and find where the hell Strawberry Plains, Tennessee is. And go a-driving looking for Strawberry Plains. And when I got to Strawberry Plains, started knocking on doors. Pardon me, could you give me a quote from Albert Einstein? Well, you don't have a quote from Albert Einstein. I know, you got a bunch from Jeebus. Yes, yeah, I understand. Well, if you don't have one from Albert Einstein, could you give me a quote from your state representative, Frank Nicely? Oh, I like that Brother Nicely. You know, ain't nobody's name fits him better than Brother Nicely's name does. I like him a lot. Well, did you know that he said that Albert Einstein said that a little knowledge would turn your head toward atheism while a broader knowledge would turn your head toward Christianity? Did you know that? Oh, God bless him. That's exactly what we've come to expect from Brother Representative Nicely. Oh, he's a good Christian man. Well, madam, did you know that he's an ignorant liar, too? How dare you! The only problem is, Representative Frank Nicely of Strawberry Plains is ignorant and quite possibly a liar. The liar part depends on whether or not he knew that what he was saying was deliberately wrong or whether he is just negligently stupid. I know. Everybody's run into the betting window to bet on negligently stupid because we're talking about a Southern repiglicking. But still, you know... You know how it is with bookies. You got to get the money right. Somebody's gonna take the intentionally mendacious bet, don't you think? What's that Bob talking about? Well, that Bob is talking about Francis Bacon. Francis Bacon. Because, you see, what it boils down to is no matter how many times you say that Albert Einstein, Ed, that quote, a little knowledge would turn your head toward atheism while a broader knowledge would turn your head toward Christianity. No matter how many times... No, he's lying. Or he's... dumber than a sack of chicken beaks. Because it... just fact... Mr. Nicely of Strawberry Plains. I missed the little S on the end of Strawberry Plains. Apparently there's more than one of them. Thank you, David. Where the hell is it, David? No, no matter how many times he said Albert Einstein said that, he's wrong. You know, there's a little controversy out there, and it boils along to this day that says William Shakespeare did not write the plays of William Shakespeare. They were most likely written by Francis Bacon. Why this controversy exists, I don't know, except that maybe some people just have to be effing cranky. Francis Bacon said that. Francis Bacon actually said, somewhere in the 15th century current era, "A little philosophy inclineth man's mind to atheism, but depth in philosophy bringeth men's minds about to religion." But see, the problem is, Representative Brother Nicely, if he would start saying things like, and bringeth, they wouldn't be thinking so highly of him back in Strawberry Plains, and they'd probably think that he was one of them homos. Inclineth, bringeth. Can't be saying that in the Tennessee State House, that inclineth. You know, I wish, this is a failing on mine, I spent so much time laughing. You have no idea what a chore show prep is sometimes, because especially on a Friday, because I just sit there with my little head on the desk, you know, kind of pounding. Ah, woohoo! Ah, Agnes, you go, oh my God, come here! And she comes running into the studio. What's wrong, Bob? What's wrong? No, no! And I'm just sitting there with my little head on the table, just kind of pointing at the monitor screen, go, look! And if I could have gotten hold of myself, not that way, during my paroxysms of laughter at Representative Brother Frank Nicely of Strawberry Plains, Tennessee, if I could have just got myself together, I could have gone and done some Googling and found out which right-wing, lying son-of-a-bitch organization, filthy conservative fundamentalist gang of well-moneyed thugs had first put out the claim that Albert Einstein said that. You know, maybe it was the Focus on the Famberley, or the Wall Builders, or maybe it was the American Family Association, or their well-heeled internet radio personality, Brian Fisher, who says that we got to kill all the grizzly bears to keep everybody from getting homosexualized. But I guarantee you that Representative Brother Frank Nicely did not come up with this by himself. Because he probably, I'm guessing, ain't that bright. So it's 2011, and we are, lo and behold, done gone back to inherit the wind times and the Scopes monkey trial. You know, that whole thing has long rubbed right-wingers in Tennessee the wrong way. Yeah, by the way, Strawberry Plains is east of this geographic moment brought to you by David in Tennessee. East of Knoxville, back in and out from, as it were, a smallish hamlet it is. I'll bet it is, David. I'll bet Reverend Brother Nicely is probably the only term life insurance salesman in Strawberry Plains. Thanks, David. You know, I'm not just picking on Tennessee. I'd bring you this story if it had happened in Alabama. Hell, they're doing their own stupid legislative dances. They done passed them their own version of the Arizona birth rating bill. But I know how much it galls me when I hear the story and it comes out of Alabama, or see the story and it comes out of West Virginia, or see references in New York Times newspaper articles to that brilliant but doomed Appalachian dancer. Just kind of makes you want to run and hide. Francis Bacon, Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein, Francis Bacon. Now, on the other hand, if I'm imagining this here real Einstein quote will not get quotated by Reverend Brother Nicely. Because on January the 3rd, 1954, in a letter to the philosopher Eric Gutkind, who was hustling a book that he'd written called Choose Life, The Biblical Call to Revolt, Einstein responded to Eric Gutkind and said, and I quote, "The word God is for me nothing more than the expression and product of human weaknesses. The Bible, a collection of honorable but still primitive legends, which are nevertheless pretty childish. No interpretation, no matter how subtle, can for me change this." You know that bill passed the Tennessee House by 70 to 23, and if I knew one of those 23 members, I would send them that quote right now. Because Reverend Brother Nicely and the other 69ers would probably, well, maybe I ought not, because they'd probably threaten to do physical harm to whoever read that into the record. Okay, without the vocal characterization, the word God is for me nothing more than the expression and product of human weaknesses. The Bible, a collection of honorable but still primitive legends, which are nevertheless pretty childish. No interpretation, no matter how subtle, can for me change this. Thank you, Susan. Wouldn't you love to play Who Said It with Reverend Brother Nicely? With a 12-pack or a bottle of good brown liquor or you know, a $50 bill on the line? I would. Oh, dear, the quote machine is cranking along. This from David in South Carolina via David in South Carolina from Isaac Asimov. And it is these ignorant people, the most undereducated, the most unimaginative, the most unthinking among us, who would make themselves the guides and leaders of us all, who would force their feeble and childish beliefs on us, who would invade our schools and libraries and homes. I personally resent it bitterly. So do I, Isaac. So do I. It's got to where I can't hardly stand to hear some godforsaken, jug-handle-eared, pig-eyed, cracker-ass, redneck moron who has been hefted up to the halls of power. And God, they are everywhere. They are everywhere. It makes me physically ill. Well, here I am. I've filibobstered for a solid hour now. And this is Friday on the Front Porch, and we've got phone calls to attend to. You know the number, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. We are 15 slots out of the 65 needed away from actual for the first half April. And that's really inspiring to see the way that y'all all respond. Thank you very kindly. We'll take a little break and come back to your calls. This is The Horn. And I I am your Friday on the Front Porch host, Bob Kincaid.
There's one thing I can't stand. Bar in this covering, trying to fake their way through castles made of sand. Well, that's one thing I can't stand. There's one thing I can't take. It's the sound that a woman makes. About 5 seconds after her heart begins to break. That's one thing I can't take. She should be home by now, but she stars. When I saw you behind the bar, I guess that's the way to keep on smiling where you are. But girl, them eyes are the biggest stars. Sounds funny when you say my name. It's like you're chewing on a foreign thing. And you won't get to sleep till dawn if it don't rain. Sounds so funny when you say my name.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
We are into the second hour of the program, Friday on the front porch on the horn, of course. And we will, no shilly-shallying about, get right back to the business at hand and go to the phones. Let's see. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's up, man?
Not much. To be a bit contrarian tonight, I was doing some thinking, and I think that the Democrats misplayed everything lately, as if we don't agree on that. But what I think, where I think they screwed up, was when the Republicans threatened to shut down the government. We Democrats should have said, "Okay, we'll do it your way. You're the guys that don't want government. You're the guys who want to get government off your back. And you want to shut it down? Fine. Here it is." You know, all these brave teabaggers rolling around in their government-provided wheelchairs aren't going to have them provided anymore. Their checks stop. They starve in the cold and the dark. You think that might get through to them?
In all candor and honesty, Cossack, no. I don't, and I'm not just trying to be an ass. I don't, because as long as they are reinforced, we shut the government down because Jesus wanted us to. You know what? That's fine You know, the teabaggers are very, very much fundamentalist Christian as well. I mean, there's no daylight between the two?
Right.
So if you, you're starving, brother, but you're starving because Jesus wants you to suffer as he did upon that tree of old. Hallelujah.
Jesus, God.
You know, it ain't like you're up there living in liberal land.
No. You're right. But I mean, if it were played correctly for the knuckle dragging crowd, you know, the Democrats could point out. See, this is
Cossack. That's the whole point. These godforsaken idiots don't know the difference between Albert Einstein and Francis Bacon. Francis Bacon is the brand that sits next to Oscar Mayer in the meat case, as far as they're concerned.
Right.
Well, here's your Oscar Mayer and your Francis Bacon and your Canadian bacon. Pick one.
No, you're right.
I know it's hard as hell to swallow, but I mean, we are not. and I worry sometimes when I say things like this because, but then again, I kind of give myself a little break because. Ignorance is curable. And people who don't cure their own ignorance become fit for a certain amount of levity. If you not only don't cure your own ignorance, but instead choose to wallow in it...
Revel in it, yes.
Then what are we supposed to think? I mean, honest to God, Francis Bacon. Really. Please, let's take a sample demographic in the United States. How many people who watched American Idol last week do you think could tell you what Francis Bacon was, did, lived, anything about him? Just anything. Well, his name was Francis. No, that's cheating. I told you that. You just learned that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, unfortunately.
I mean, I would even accept some people think he was the bastard child of Queen Elizabeth and Sir Walter Raleigh. Okay? I would take that.
Yeah. Well, it was... It may not...
died after catching cold following an experiment on a chicken. I'll take that.
Right.
Thought by some to have written the plays of Shakespeare. Okay.
Correct.
16th century philosopher. Great. Pass that. You get a cigar. But here, let's go. I mean, we want to talk to you. This is your fault. Okay, screw Francis Bacon, because there's probably a bunch of people on our side who couldn't either. Horn family accepted.
Yeah.
Albert Einstein.
Yeah.
Ask a birther, deather, tenther, booger eater, helmet wearer, oatmeal dribbler about Albert Einstein. Well, he believed in God. He admitted there was a God, and that's all they can tell you. When he didn't.
No.
He said, I do not believe that the Creator plays dice with the universe. That is not logically an admission of a belief in the existence of said Creator.
No. And the other thing, if he would have said anything, he would not have referred to Christianity, not being Christian.
Yeah, being as he was Jewish and all. Yes, there is that.
You know, just that should raise the hackles on the back of your neck and go, wait, please. Back up. How did you get there from here?
And, you know, one of the oldest gags in the entire Southern lexicon of jokery, Ron and Raleigh just dredged up. You know, Reverend Brother Nicely from Strawberry Plains closed his oration by saying, pi r squared. And you know why he did that? Because it's the oldest joke in the Southern lexicon of humor.
Right.
Because it's kind of like call and response in church. 92 members of that Tennessee House of Representatives thought in their skulls the minute that he said pi r squared, cornbread r square, pi r round.
There you go.
I did it too. And I, so, you know, I.
Everybody does.
No, pi r round, cornbread r square.
Right. Pi r not round, pi r not square. Around.
MR not ducks, MR pigs.
There you go.
Jesus Christ, what are you doing to me?
But, I don't know. Does a mountain literally have to fall on them before they get the point?
No, even that won't do it. Even that won't do it. And we're talking about, of course, 20% of the population.
Yeah.
But apparently that is enough of a concentration within the body politic to prove lethal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, every now and then when I'm watching my Twitter feed, I'll see these statements like, we've got to get inspired and press on. Press harder, brothers. And you know what? And it's coming from progressives and liberals. And I said, amen! Power to the people! You know.
Yeah.
But there's that little devil on, my little Fred Flintstone pessimistic devil on my shoulder going, yeah, how are you going to press on in Louis Gohmert's district? How are you going to press on in John Boehner's district? Because, see, that's the thing. We have this notion that somehow or another we can just fix stuff.
Well,
you know, with an election. An election will make everything better. Because the American people have suddenly wised up. No, they haven't. The next chance they get, they will send Representative Brother Nicely back from Strawberry Plains to the Tennessee legislature. And they'll do it every time he asks them to.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't it?
I'm not trying to be an ass here.
No, you're not. Wasn't it Emma Goldman who said that...
If voting really worked, it would be illegal.
Right. If voting really changed anything, it would be illegal.
Yeah, and see, there was a lesson to be learned looking back. There was a lesson to be learned out of the last time the Democrats had control of the House.
Yeah.
How did we lose control of the House this time, Cossack? Well, all the blue dog, phony baloney, not really Democrats, wolves in sheep's clothing, Republican lights got thrown out in favor of the real fire-breathing birth or death or bag or tenth or booger eaters.
Yeah.
Which means that there are a vast number of districts in this country that are stupid, clean to the bone, where people with progressive ideals or liberal values have been thinned and winnowed to the point that they are very nearly politically irrelevant. It's idiocracy all over again. You know, while Luann and Bubba are, and I'm going to all of y'all tonight, the idiocracy liberals are sitting, you know, we don't know if it's time for us to have a baby or not.
Exactly. And the best of the breed tend to breed at their best capacity. In other words, they don't have more children than they can adequately provide for, one way or another. You know?
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, you have some people who, you know, have no problem with human beings that's going to need help along the way.
Well, here, let me just go ahead and just run my flag right up the Bob Kincaid is a horse's ass flagpole and say, you want to change things? You said, do you have to drop a mountain on them? Well, here's the answer. And if I get hate mail, I'll just have to deal with it. You want to change things? Go ahead and pass the Ryan budget. Go ahead and cut food stamps to the damn bone. And let these ignorant sons of bitches, because most of them, I hate using that phrase. Let these ignorant right-wing, mouth-breathing, knuckle-dragging, helmet-wearing oatmeal droolers starve. And there, I've said it. I sound like Brother Hagee now. Starve!
Yeah.
Cut off white trash America's food stamp allotment and watch the Republican voting base go bye-bye.
Oh, yeah.
But the problem with that is that you catch a lot of decent people in the teeth, in the jaws of that dilemma as well.
True.
So...
But the thing is, I mean, I'm glad somebody finally looked at Ryan's proposal and said, wait, this isn't going to work. You know, you're going to get rid of Medicare with a voucher?
Oh, not just that. Did you catch the fact that Keith Ellison completely humiliated on the floor today or yesterday? Oh, it was a beautiful moment, Cossack, a truly beautiful moment. Because he asked some questions. He was asking some questions about how the Ryan budget plan actually works. And it is a truly glorious moment in what passes for political debate on the floor of the House of Representatives. This is an exchange between Keith Ellison and Todd Rokita, a Repiglican from Indiana. And you'll find, Keith Ellison lays out the nature of his inquiry. Here we go.
The gentleman from Minnesota is recognized for 15 seconds.
I hate this.
Give the gentleman 5 seconds for a question, if the gentleman would entertain a question. Be willing to yield the gentleman 5 seconds to answer a question. When does the Ryan budget create a surplus?
The budget proposed and voted on by the committee.
Reclaiming my time.
The gentleman's time has expired.
Or not.
Okay, I'll yield to answer the question, not for a filibuster.
So with responsible, gradual reforms to the drivers of our debt, like Medicare and Social Security, this budget will balance.
Does the gentleman from Arizona give more time to the gentleman from Minnesota?
15 seconds.
Seconds.
I asked the gentleman when the Ryan budget created a surplus. He could have given me a year. He didn't. That's because he's probably embarrassed about when that is. Let me tell you when the Progressive Caucus comes to surplus, 2021. That is known as a responsible budget.
And here's the fun part, Cossack. That question that he asked the repig licking horse's ass from Indiana, you know what the answer to the question is?
Hmm.
The answer to that question is 2040.
Right.
That's the first time you see anything resembling a surplus. That's 29 years from now. See what happens when I do math on the fly? 29 years from now, whereas the progressive proposal actually begins to yield a surplus less than 10 years from now.
Well, on the foreseeable horizon, as opposed to 2040, which God only knows. Bob, here's the other thing. These people are such idiots that if you do the math, you know, figures don't lie, but liars can figure.
Oh! He shoots, he scores.
You know, but the numbers themselves do not lie, okay? If their theories, their laughable Laffer curve and all of that implies, if those theories worked, they would have worked by now. The tax rate amongst the uber wealthy is the lowest it has been since the Depression, since before the Depression.
You know, we got to figure out a way to put that on a bumper sticker, Cossack. If tax cuts yielded prosperity, it would have happened by now. The Horn family will get on that. We'll get that distilled to something and get on a bumper sticker because there's real genius in that. Because how long have we been waiting for the tax cuts for the rich to yield frisbees and wheat checks and automobiles that run on unicorn power?
Since 1980.
Yeah, voodoo economics. Cossack, you have managed to get all six lines going at once, brother. I'm going to hit them. Thanks for getting it started.
All right, Bob.
Later, brother. Have a great weekend.
You too. Say hi to Agnes and the kids.
I sure will. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Ain't that the truth, though? If tax cuts were going to work, they'd have worked by now. It's kind of like taking castor oil and having nothing happen and keep taking the castor oil. It's no fun, and it still sucks. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, we'd be drowning in jobs by now.
Yeah, everybody'd have six.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can just... I like how everybody just waits around. You just all you got to do is make sure you look out for them, and they will look out for you.
One of these days.
Man, I'll tell you. How are you doing tonight there?
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like a pretty, you know, and I haven't even gotten to the silly stuff yet, Reverbo.
Yeah, that was, forget, you know, that was one of those so-called rhetorical questions. But I thought we could do that connecting the dots stuff that we like to do so much and work our way back to your friend Mr. Nicely.
Oh, do, please.
But I'd like to go...
That's Reverend Brother Nicely.
Yeah. I didn't hear the lecture last night, but I did listen to Chris Hedges, and I think I listened to Chris Hedges twice, and I was just knocked out by him, as I always am. And I think we can come full circle with this through Hedges. I think the point that I think was so important that he made, and you know, we've all talked about this before too, is that ethical dilemma, first of all, that everybody has, at least I have, and people who listen to this show probably have. You know, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. The bus has been waiting. The engine is idling, and we're leaving. And the next still haven't figured out how to buy a ticket. And do we just leave them in the dust or what? And then the whole Hedges thing, and I've heard you say this too, when you think of it on this more of a historical goal, I don't know. When you think of it on another level, then you realize where the real the real tragedy of this is, because we abandoned, the progressives and the liberals basically abandoned a whole group of people who were asking, looking for answers. And we could have smartened them up a little tiny bit. Instead, we just let hung them out to dry. And Republicans, the big ones, they don't want to smarten anybody. They don't want to smarten up chumps. They want to leave them well chumped, which leaves me, heads me into a thing that I want to invent and go viral, and it's the phrase well chumped. I want you to think about this. How many times you can use this in your line of work?
I like my redneck well chumped.
Well, and they are. The teabaggers are certainly well chumped. And, well, I mean, you know, you can speak to this too. I mean, aren't these the grapes? Isn't this Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath people? I mean, they were out there kind of begging to be led, and we just said, you know, you ignorant necks, you just, you know, we just hung them out to dry.
Yeah, and frankly, our friend Joe Bagent says the very same thing.
Yeah, I was going to also move into that, how Hedges and Bagent seem to touch on their themes, or you obviously know better than me. Yeah, they have common themes in there.
Well, yeah, and that's the whole point. While I sit here and I shamefully make light of Reverend Brother Nicely, the fact of the matter is, the stupidity that we love to cackle at in the right wing is a stupidity that we as a nation chose. Wouldn't you say, Reverbo? We chose it.
Well, that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
You don't want, there's a reason you don't want smarted up rednecks and smarted up hillbillies and smarted up this and smarted up that. You don't want that, because if they're that way, then the next thing you know, they're going to become real trouble for their betters.
Well, they might actually start to think. And when they do that, how can anybody vote for any Republican?
You know, that goes back to our old buddy Milton Friedman and the dead hand sticking out of his grave, still having its hand around, still having it being grasped around the neck of America. Keep your working force stupid so that they will stay desperate, so that labor costs may be kept artificially low, so that the rich can get richer and the desperate stay desperate, and everybody's happy and everybody has a share.
No wonder he was so popular.
Oh, he was huge on the cocktail party circuit. You know, he was serious like only Paul Ryan can dream of being serious, because he was practically genocidally serious. It did not matter to Milton Friedman he was the economic manifestation of that old quote that's either attributed to Stalin or some Nazi, that 20 people dying is a tragedy and 20,000 are a statistic.
Yeah. Oh, he was, the Friedman and his, all those people were world changers. They were country destroyers with the bank loans and the IMF and all of this stuff. They were, people just ran with that, and just, I'm surprised. It's almost hard to believe that we still are hanging on as best we are, when you think about it.
Yeah, and frankly, they're standing up there stomping our fingers while we hang, and then we put the other hand up, and they stomp that for a while. We take it down, put the other one up, stomp it for a little, or we're just going to lose fingers.
Yeah, or someone's going to grab onto that ankle. Say enough is enough.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. Okay. Well, now let's segues right into another thing that Hedges referenced, and I don't know where this came from, but I think I may have used it, or I think I certainly have seen it, and so have you. Someone who's a quote about the mistake that people make, that or progressives or liberals make, for lack of a better term, is the idea, why can't you get good people into politics, right? They're either mediocre or they're venal. The more important question, the most important concept is, the hell with that. How do you make the ones in power afraid of you?
or leave.
And now we're right there at Richard K. Morgan and Altered Carbon to make it personal.
Yes, we are. Bingo.
See? I love this connected dot game.
It's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of toaster potential in it, too, Reverbo.
Well chumped. I'm telling you, I want it to go viral.
Well chumped.
It passes the funny test for me so far. I can't say it enough. We have to admit that the entire South Carolina State Senate, one would expect they're well chumped down there.
Oh, you know what? I got proof. You know, you've got a certain magic this way, Reverbo. I have a note from David in South Carolina.
Bingo.
While they advocate huge cuts to social programs, education, foods, and food stamps, but South Carolina voters apparently don't care about their tax dollars being wasted as long as it's Republicans doing the wasting. Way to go, Haley, setting a good example on spending. And he's not talking about Haley Baba. By the way, Haley Baba, face-to-face doughy man from Mississippi, made his first campaign appearance in New Hampshire. You got to figure Haley Barber, you know, it would have been easier if he'd been in Mexico. I mean, there's, really, you know, New Hampshire's a, you know, I mean, hey, Juan, donde está la bourbon?
Oh, God, he might as well have gone over to North Korea.
No, but he went to New Hampshire instead. And, of course, you know, because he's got one of those little rubber wristbands that says WWMED, what would Medgar Evers do? Haley Baba's first stop in New Hampshire was, of course, at a nice white gun store.
Of course.
But it wasn't Haley Barber that David in South Carolina was referring to, Reverbo. He was referring to Nikki Haley, the teabagging governor of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And the headline to which he refers is simply this. South Carolina governor racks up $17,000 grocery bill in 10 weeks. Now, again, in my conversation with Reverbo, once again were reminded that I do math on the fly real poorly like. But let's just be reminded that the average food stamp allotment under President Not Sure has gone up to actually somewhere around $4.50 a day. And so the average food stamp allotment for 10 weeks, that's 10 times 7 is 70, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on food stamps in South Carolina, in the 10 weeks that Governor Nikki Haley has racked up $17,000 in groceries, you yourself, profligate food stamp eater, have racked up a $315 bill. Now, see, that's $315 Nikki Haley could have had instead of having to cut corners and pull in the bill at $17,000. Well chumped.
Well chumped. That, you just got to hit the bell too often with that. Now, remember...
How would you like that, sir? Well, you know, just any conversation with any Republican. And how would you like that, Senator Whackbottom? Well chumped, thank you.
Thank you, yeah. How do you want all your constituents? Well chumped. Well, yeah, well, it's too bad because everybody sort of starts out the same. We all kind of pop out. Now, obviously, very quickly, things just go downhill. You know, poverty and abusive parents and crappy public education and religion and too many Slim Jims and it's almost a lost cause very quickly. But, they were, there they were, looking around for a direction, and everybody just said, well, just you possum eaters do not interest us. And so, look what you got.
Now, as you take little Brittany home from the hospital, now that you've birthed her, ma'am, I do hope you will get her well on the road to being well chumped before she gets into grade school.
That's not planned, Doctor. Oh, here's just the.
We're gonna take her to church for her first chumping real soon.
That's right. God, get chumped. What else did Hedges say that I really? His entire speech was like,
Yeah, and by the way, I think, based on a conversation I had with Ben Birch, let me check real quick. I think that audio, because folks need to know that the video for Chris Hedges over at our Ustream channel cuts off at the end of the lecture. But the audio goes all the way through the Q&A. It's not up yet. But Ben did tell me that he has plans to get that file up as soon as possible.
Well, and I recommend, I've heard the whole thing, and I recommend all your listeners go searching it out, because the Q&A has a very important portion in there that involves Bob in the Box. That would be you.
Well, you know me. Yeah. I can't resist asking a question when questions are there to be asked.
Well, somebody kind of bad-mouthed Ralph Nader. I won't give this away, but you managed to straighten some things out, and maybe made the citizens of West Virginia feel a little responsible. But at any rate,
well, that's only because we are.
Well, yeah.
I mean that you know, West Virginia, and you know, God. Remember, the Quran says that there are 99 names for God, and there's actually 100th, but only the camel knows it, and he ain't talking. Well, the camel is among the most ironic animals on planet Earth, if you think about it. And, the 100th name of God is irony. And here's one for you. If you take facing the palm of your right hand, Reverbo, are you with me here?
Yeah.
Okay, you're holding the palm of your right hand out toward you. Now make that obscene gesture known to us all as the bird. Okay?
I'm making it.
Okay, and your thumb's kind of pointing out to the right, and the bird's the middle finger's pointing north, and what you have there is the outline of the state of West Virginia.
Damn.
West Virginia is the only state in the Union that is shaped like an obscene gesture. And in November of 2000, when we flocked to the polls to go and vote for George W. Bush, because Charlton Heston said that greeniac Al Gore was going to get our guns, we did to the entire United States what the outline of our state suggests. And Ralph Nader had not a damn thing to do with it, and neither did Florida. Those five little pissant electoral votes come in like they had every, you know, when Nixon rolled over McGovern. McGovern carried West Virginia. Okay? We vote for Democratic presidential candidates.
God, I forgot that. McGovern, I wasn't sure. I didn't remember. Did he get any state besides West Virginia? Did he even get Wisconsin?
I didn't get Wisconsin. I think he got two states, and we were one of them. I may get corrected. But no, we have this long history of voting for Democratic presidential nominees. And in the year 2000, we just, no, you know what? We're going to America instead. Well chumped.
Yeah, well, well known and well chumped. Of course, now, well chumped. Now, we have to be careful that we don't miss. That we keep our eyes open here, because some people pose as chumped when in fact they're just weasels. They know, they're damn right they know that the Flintstones is a cartoon show and not a documentary. They just pretend not to know because they're dealing with a well chumped,
Right. That's the well. That's commandment two: never give a sucker an even break.
No.
In order to never give a sucker an even break, sometimes you must make yourself to appear like as to a greater sucker than the sucker be.
Oh, they're pros at that. Do you remember when Hedges said that the language of... I'm reading from my notes. It was worth taking notes. Remember when he said the language of violence in a deteriorating society inevitably leads to violence itself?
Yes, I do remember that.
I don't know if that was his line or he was referencing a line, but it's always nice to just keep hearing over and over and over again that everything that Joseph Goebbels knew and everything that Madison Avenue knew and everything that everybody really knows doesn't really work. Okay. And I guess Coca-Cola and AT&T and all the Republicans can just, like, give up their ad budgets for, like, the next 5,000 years. It doesn't work.
Yeah, right.
Of course it works. Remember when he said, he used the word cannibalize.
Yes.
Capitalist forces unleashed, Bob, will cannibalize your country. Because everything becomes a commodity, and it will exploit until exhaustion everything.
Well, exactly, and it's predatory capitalism. Remember, I mean, you're a little bit older than me. You remember an America where health care was not a matter of bone-crushing debt?
Neither was college education.
It was difficult sometimes, and if you had an extended illness, it was... but you know what? There was a reasonable chance of working it off. But we live in an America now where, yes, that cannibalism that Chris Hedges was talking about has been made manifest. And they got, you know, they cannibalized and profitized everything around them, and then they looked at the healthcare system and said, holy cow, how did we overlook that?
It's such an appropriate image, too, especially where you are, when you think that every time they one of those, you know, steam shovels, Christ, I called it a steam shovel, every time a shovel, you know, hauls out another load of coal, the imagery is perfect. We are cannibalizing ourselves. We're eating our own country.
And which takes us back to that brilliant quote from Kurt Vonnegut that you turned me on to so long ago. In a little over 100 years, white Westerners had managed to completely destroy Appalachia for heat.
Yeah, it's... I'm going to do one more quick one because I was so happy to hear this again that I have heard on your show. I always thought, in my own, you know, semi-developed capacity to do these things, that people gave Roosevelt, that in retrospect, Roosevelt should be a hero of these predatory capitalists instead of people just, you know, wanting to just undo everything he did.
Right, because he kept the masses from going on a throat-slitting frenzy.
I.e., well, or ergo, he allowed capitalism to survive and saved it to prey on us again.
Yeah.
Exactly what he did. Why does he get such a bad rap for that?
Well, because at the same time, the great-grandfathers of this current crop of thugs were calling him, and it's not a joke, literally called FDR a traitor to his class. Because instead of letting them take all they wanted, he made them take just some of what they wanted. It's like, I've mentioned it before, but there was one of the last evenings aboard the ship back in February. I ran
Silver
into
Pelican?
I ran
what ship?
Oh, no, not the Silver Pelican. The MS Eurodam. The Eurodam. I ran into Kathy Malloy, and she said, "Bob, quick, come with me. Somebody has to see this who can verify this independently, because nobody's going to believe this if I just say it. They're just going to say that I was in some sort of chocolate-induced frenzy." And down on the deck around the swimming pool, there was arranged this entire display, ostentatious display of the most stunning desserts you ever imagined. I mean, there were pineapple upside-down cakes made inside entire pineapples that were upside down. There was a glass case of artisanal candy apples. There were candy apple flavored candy apples. cheesecakes and literal fountains of milk, white and dark chocolate.
Oh, it makes you feel like you, for a minute, you are in the patrician class.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And you know, Kathy was just agape. I mean, she was beautiful. That she was goggle-eyed. And she said, "Look at all this. But I'm not dreaming this, am I?" And no, you're not. But see, had there been a Repiglican around that display who thought no one was watching, they just would have started gathering it to them, whether they could eat it or not.
Of course they would have.
And because they have to have it. Because if they don't have it and have it all, it has no independent justification for existence.
Well, and they're letting all the other Republicans, their entire raison d'etre, they're letting them all down. You have to consume everything, even if you're full.
Right.
Go get another plate.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of those little sign, you know, that's one of those little Rod Serling signposts. There's a signpost up ahead. That you're on the way toward an empire in trouble. You know, not necessarily the thing on the ship. I mean, that's just the kind of hospitality thing that they do. But moreover, that consumption for consumption's sake kind of thing. And you walk into the next room and there's a big basket of fresh feathers for you to stick down your throat so you can vomit real good and go eat some more. With the entire idea of nourishment being completely by the board.
Right. In medical terminology, known, of course, as cancer.
See, I ain't got no bell.
Growth simply for growth's sake.
Yeah. Unrestrained and completely out of control.
Unchecked, unfettered. Now we're back to cancer. Well, they ought to be, yeah, you would expect them to just start eating themselves. God, maybe they. Well, I guess that's the problem. Real quick, I want to, since I have somewhat become the occasional NPR critic. Here we go again with these people. I don't like it. Wednesday, April 12th. I'm listening. You know, you're listening because that's all there is to listen to. Unless I'm on the internet, then I can listen to anything. But you know, I'm always on the internet. Here we go, and I hear this little blurb: California enacting legislation. This is huge. To require utilities to provide one-third of all the power, other power, from non-fossil fuels, or from clean energy sources in, what, 10 years or something like that. It's huge. And then, thank you very much, instead of sticking a microphone in the mouth of someone who endorses this idea, and we can develop this idea more, the first thing you hear is,
well, this is a job killer.
No, we want pretty much. It's somebody who decided to say that I'm paraphrasing here, but positioning ourselves in a non-fossil friendly as non-fossil friendly, when big business just won't want to move to California. Aha! I mean, there's not even any semblance of being covert about this anymore. Right. If we possibly clean up our act, well, you know, all these filthy businesses that have...
Right. It's like having a paradise, an island in paradise, and saying, no one will ever want to visit our island if we eliminate cannibalism.
Right.
No one, see how I took it back to Chris Hedges like that? See how good I am?
Well, it's just what's who you are and what you do. Well, no one would ever want to poison it and you know, destroy it again if you made it all nice.
But you know what? That seems like small potatoes in a way to me, Reverbo, and I'm not discounting the validity of the story or your observation, but I think the well-chumped story of the night has to come out of Arizona.
Oh, they're up among the leaders with Texas and South Carolina, as you know.
You know, they had their little birther bill to make sure that we didn't elect no Muslim fascist, Islamist Kenyan the people with deep-seated hatreds of white people and anti-colonialist views. They had them a bill like that, right? And it was going to make sure anybody ran for office in Arizona, by God, it'd have to show their long-form birth certificate, right? And that bill toddled along in that draft form for a while, but then some Weisenheimer decided that maybe that was a little too restrictive, and that besides, if we're trying to prevent what we all know we're trying to prevent, there's other ways of doing it. So they added in a provision that said a certificate of baptism would also suffice.
That is another way.
But then somebody says, wait a minute. We gotta go further than that, and besides, it won't make no difference in the scope of what we're trying to do here. And now the bill language includes proof of circumcision.
No, really.
No, really.
No, it's Friday on the front porch. Everything's kind of, you know.
Yeah, I know, and I've been into the white lightning.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, I'm that's funny.
Ha ha! Yeah, yeah. What's the link over to the Onion, Bob?
That's hilarious. Yeah, so evidently, if Albert Einstein, and I'm not picking on him, but we are connecting the dots. If he happened to have been born in the United States a while back, I guess he couldn't be president now, could he?
Well, he was Jewish, so he would have that certificate of circumcision.
Wait, but he wasn't baptized.
Wait, don't have to be baptized. The certificate of circumcision will stand good as well.
Okay, either or. Okay.
You know, I don't know why, but it's just the sick little way that my mind works. When I saw that story, as soon as I stopped wetting myself, I thought about that old Teleflora or FTD ad slogan. Remember Merlin Olsen standing there looking soulfully into the camera with those soulful soulful Basset Hound eyes of his, and saying, "Say it with flowers." And that just rolled through my head, and then the next thing that followed that was, "But if you're in Arizona, prove it with penis."
Oh God! You know, I had mercifully forgotten the entire voice and image of Merlin Olsen until right now, and I don't know whether to blame you or thank you for that.
No, I think blaming's probably appropriate. Yeah, but
okay.
God, because see, again, everybody in Arizona is quite convinced that that would easily stop that one from being able to run for president in Arizona, because everybody knows he's a Muslim. And ain't nobody quite stepped up to let those birthers, deathers, you know, the group in the Arizona legislature know that Muslims circumcise too. But they don't give out certificates, and by God, if it's written in that Arab language, we know he ain't American.
I don't want to drop this on our horn listeners tonight. I know some of them have distinct feelings on some things, but the internet is a wonderful place, and strange discoveries you can find them everywhere. And actually, there's a group of guys who are, you know where I'm headed with this.
I know, and I know what they're trying to grow back.
Yeah, it's like we are rebelling against this whole circumcision thing. And they think it's some sort of conspiracy or something. And not only are they, some people just aren't getting one, and some people are trying to grow them back. That's the imagery, you know.
Reverbo, I have a son, and that's an argument that I lost. I said, hey, he's my son. He's probably the only son I'll ever have. Can we leave that thing alone? Nope. I lost a 1-to-1 tie, Reverbo. Nope, we gotta mutilate that penis. And
well,
it just pisses me off. I mean, I know what these guys are doing. I mean, they're walking around with the fishing weights hanging from the Come on.
Okay,
come
okay,
on.
Okay, you're right, right, right. I just let's just let everyone use their imagination. I think that would be more fun. But,
I don't think I've ever heard you move faster to stop me.
But I'm sure that our well-chumped legislators in Arizona are going to figure out we can. This bill isn't quite. This is still in its draft stage, I would think.
But it has to be a certificate of circumcision, not a certificate of live circumcision.
Well, yeah, something like that. And growing it back, I don't know how they're going to feel about that.
Well, look, you know, the idiots are already out there, and they're convinced that he's had brain surgery. That's when they put that anti-colonialist chip in. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but really, with the birthers not quite getting the traction that they need. They've got to keep the well-chumped, well-entertained. So now, did you know Barack Obama has a giant scar going up at the back of his head? It looks like they took the entire back of his skull off. Because they did.
Yeah, because they did.
He's had massive brain surgery, and we deserve to know what kind.
You only a profoundly well-chumped group of supporters. Think how well-chumped you need to be to buy into this bullshit on
but
level.
Yeah, and see this. This circumcision thing has roots, sorry, or it's got legs, because this now marks, with the passage of this bill in Arizona, this now marks the second consecutive Democratic president with which the right wing, toward the end of his first term, has developed a full-on fascination with his junk. I was told you earlier in the program, you know, the guy who first put Santorum into the lexicon.
I'm familiar with Savage.
I think it's time for Dan Savage to sit down and have a real serious latency conversation with the entirety of the well-chumped repiglican base.
I want to go back to this word junk. I don't like it.
I don't either.
Can we just get rid of it? I wasn't even crazy about package.
No, see, I was trying to show that I'm like all hip and keen with the Hepcat New crowd.
Yeah, but some of the Hepcat New crowd stuff, ain't, this is just me, and, you know, I'm not, you know, I want to look just like the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. I don't want to look like plenty of people walking around now, but I like to think that I'm not an old fart. But you just have to be. Some of this stuff going on is just too. We've got this concept of getting dumber and dumbing down is. It has to be reversed. But anyway, I don't. You know, junk. That just. I've never really been comfortable with that. And I'm going to mention something else. And people seem to have been heading off into the blue areas of your show tonight more than I remember. You seem to have a bit of a preoccupation with I don't know what, with things that happened below deck tonight. Is that any reason for that?
I didn't mean to, but that's what the Republicans gave me. I can only work with the material I'm given.
Well, you're working, you do work with what they give you, yeah. There's been some few one-liners tonight. I don't remember. You're on the blue side of town. You're rolling some gutter balls.
Rolling some gutter balls.
Here's another NPR thing. Another thing people want to talk to you. God, I hope so. Another NPR thing when they were talking about the budget fight. And how you know, of course, the Democrats are going to have to compromise. And here's another NPR quote. And the Democrats, of course, had to give up some of their, quote, favorite plans, like Pell Grant. Oh, I see. That's just a favorite little thing that the Democrats like, making it easy for people to get to go.
Yeah, because actual real Americans, they want to go back to predatory bank lending.
Well, like, there's been no Republican kids, sons or daughters of Republicans that, like, ever, like, applied for a Pell Grant, I suppose. They're all billionaires. I mean, it's just disgusting.
You know, it's funny. We just got an email in from Jan saying, dang, I noticed that too, Bob, the Down Under mentions. Well, I didn't mean to. But, you know, when Rick Santorum's what you've got.
Say no more. Say no more. All right. Well, Trump, we want this to go viral. We want to see if we can actually do this. Wouldn't it be cool?
There's a hyphen there, right? Just so we make sure we all get on the same track at the same time. That's
so.
Well-chumped.
And it's certainly easy to, I mean, there's no end to using it. But wouldn't it be cool?
Maybe it would just, you know what? Maybe it's just a white bumper sticker with a big old red, white, and blue GOP elephant and the words well-chumped.
Well, hello, well-chumped and proud of it.
In parentheses.
I don't know what your legacy is going to... Well, you're going to have a... Everybody thinks about their legacy from time to time. You know, even... Honestly, most of us are just... It's just another person pushing a cart down aisle six at Safeway, really. I mean, I don't... You know, in 60 years, nobody's going to even remember I was even here. But it would be fun to... You know, me, and I like words and well-crafted sentences and oh, by the way, for my 8 listeners... And for the Head On Radio Network website, I have an announcement that a cavalcade of crazy will finally return next week.
Oh, glory!
Yes, with episode 3 of Looking for Work in a cavalcade of crazy with Reverbo and his sidekick Ross Perot. Look for this next week. I'm
awesome. And you know, next time you take up the Silver Pelican. You might want to think about adding one of those readable signs like they had. What you've got to do is monetize the Silver Pelican. You know how the MetLife blimp has Snoopy on it? You just need a blinking chasing light that just flashes well, chump, 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 well chumped, well chumped.
I don't want to be well chumped up there. But when these things go viral, right, you can't control them. Yeah, you don't know where they're headed.
Precisely.
Anyway, I'll leave you with this. It would be cool, when all is said and done, to invent a word in the lexicon. To have something that people say and use and, you know, wouldn't that be neat? Wouldn't that be cool?
Well, it would be. And Jan just wrote in and said, here's a toast to well-chumped.
Thank you. And then maybe well-chumped isn't quite as profound and significant as one would like, but it sure beats. Maybe it's up there with orientate. I mean, some brain dead idiot, you know, came up with that to use it, or things like, well, I partnered with my friend Bill.
And I you know what? I could care less whether you partnered with your friend Bill.
Well,
there's that one too. I could care less.
I could care less. Right? But I don't know. I guess I wouldn't mind saying yawn.
You know, but there are variations on the theme, and we will go in a second here. But there are variations on the theme. For instance, the next time Summer Piglickin gets up in the House of Representatives and starts talking about, the Senate. Senator Kyle saying that 90% of what Planned Parenthood does is abortions. You'd like to see what passes for a liberal senator stand up and say, Mr. President, I object to these chumped-up charges.
It's a word that needs to be used more. It continues to be. It doesn't lose its humor the more you use it, and we do get to reference it all the way back to. Is it W.C. Fields?
Yes.
Well, hey, you can't do much better than that.
Chump, don't smarten up, A.
Indeed. Well. A wonderful conversation. I'm glad you're on the front porch tonight. Until that time, make it personal.
Make it personal, Reverbo. Take care. Have a good weekend.
All right.
Bye now.
All right, you too. Bye.
Our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. What's up?
First, well, brevity is a soul of wit, and I'll take 15 seconds. pursuant to Langston Hughes, there's a very good film out called Brother to Brother, and I would suggest that you find it. It deals with Langston Hughes and his contemporaries.
Okay. I just wrote it down.
And what's this business about circumcision? Were you against it or pro it or whatever?
Well, what I feel about it is no big deal. No, it's just a matter of what the geniuses in the Arizona legislature have done.
And what are they saying?
They will accept as proof of citizenship a certificate of circumcision.
Well, you know, that's a very healthy medical practice as far as I'm concerned. And by the way, there's one man in history who said that circumcision was a blemish. You know who that was?
No.
Adolf Hitler.
Well, not surprising. I just see it as one more practice of genital mutilation that we as 21st century humans could probably get away without.
I non-concur. Good night.
All right. Bye, Jim. Because, see, you know, maybe it was handy, I don't know, back when our human forebears were scrabbling with the weasels over what the lions and cheetahs didn't want, and bathing was something that hadn't really come on. But, no. No. I mean, you know, if you're a guy and you want one, why not let the guy make an informed consent decision? Instead of just jumping out there with a knife the minute he's born. Because, see, we have absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissies over the same thing being done to female genitalia, you know, a knife being taken to them. But, oh, chop on the guy? Well chomped. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Andy. How about you?
All right. Hey, I listened to that Chris Hedges piece. That was nice of you to speak up for Mr. Nader.
Well, you know, I just can't stand factual inaccuracy.
No, they always try to stick that baloney on Ralph for what happened in Florida, and it's a bad meme, very bad.
Well, it's not so. It's worse than bad. It's incorrect.
Correct. It's a fallacy. Hey, a few items that I was thinking about. Number one, the package, the budget that Obama agreed to, which is the largest cut ever, you know, in discretionary spending, the $38.5 billion.
Right.
You're not hearing this in the press, but if we had done the full $61 billion, according to Mark Zandi, over at Moody's.com, who's an economist, and he was actually John McCain's chief economist, that would have cost us 700,000 jobs if we had done $61 billion. Since we did $38 billion, you got to figure this is going to cost us about 400,000 jobs. And Goldman Sachs said that if we had done the $61 billion in discretionary spending cuts, it would have cost us 2 to 2.5% in GDP in the next two quarters, either Q2 or Q3. Well, we just did $38 billion, so you can expect 1% to 1.5% to be lopped off of GDP. And it just,
which in turn will also have ramifications for consumer spending?
Absolutely. That's what it is. It's a complete drop in consumer spending because jobs are going to be lost and people aren't going to be spending. It's just going to tighten up the economy and send us back.
Which leaves us in the sort of through the looking glass position, Andy, of asking, now why would why would they want, I mean, they're talking about, you know, we've got to get the debt in hand, we've got to rebuild the economy, and we've got to grow the economy, and yeah, blah, 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 which, you know, Republican man, you know, he tell lies.
Exactly. Republicans are just in a fantasy world.
Well, but see, I don't...
They don't believe anything about stimulus. They, you know, they don't believe in Keynesian economics, period. They don't believe the government has any place in the economic system whatsoever. The government has one place, and that seems to be to protect the rich and to have a military to expand imperialism for the corporations.
But doesn't it go further...
Corporations and protect the rich is what government's supposed to be doing.
But doesn't it extend further than that, Andy? I mean, at the end of the day, isn't this literally a matter of playing politics with people's very existence? Isn't this more about trying to make sure that there isn't anything resembling even an anemic economic recovery as we go into the 2012 election cycle?
Absolutely. And absolutely. And, you know, people who have spoken up about, you know, how just working class people have to take responsibility. And I think it was, who was that? Dennis Miller, I heard the other day. I don't know if you heard him, but he made a comment that was just a disgusting comment, that saying, if you're an individual and you're just I'm paraphrasing, something about you're just limping along in life, and if you have some kind of disability, and you know, you can't compete in the job market, and you just don't have what it takes to make in America, well, you better just come to that realization and suck it up, because that's the way it's going to be for the rest of your life, and it's going to be tough, and you just, you know, take what life gives you, and you better be, you better just smile about it.
You know, he didn't smile.
Huh?
Yeah, he didn't smile.
That's right. You just accept it. And that's not. You know, everybody at points in time needs help. And that's what the government should be doing. I think that's what Franklin Roosevelt believed during the Great Depression. There comes a time when people do get stuck. And in order to get back on the right track, it's nice to have some kind of safety net, which the rest of the developed world does have, of course.
Although, anyway, although in the rest of the developed world, people are people like the Wall Street and Wall Street banksters and the right wingers and so forth are going hammer and tongs trying to destroy what they have. You know, look at look at the economic impact of the austerity, so-called austerity program in Great Britain.
Right, it sent them into a negative GDP quarter the last quarter. And, you know, pundits, people like Paul Krugman were saying that was going to do that. It's pretty clear, but that's not what the Tory government was saying. They said it was, it's this Republican baloney meme that, oh, when you cut back on government, you cut spending, there's more for the private sector. And it's going to grow, the private sector is going to take the place of government and create jobs. Baloney. Baloney. That's not what's happening when you don't have enough consumer spending. It's going to cut back. And people who knew it, you know, more on the lines of Keynesian economics knew that that was what the Tory government was going to do. Of course, they're going hand in hand with the Liberal government as a minority party of that team, which...
Yeah, there's no small amount of collusion going on.
That blows my mind that they're even getting away with that. No, too, what'd you think of Obama's speech?
That was a great speech.
God, that guy gives a good speech, don't he?
He gives an excellent speech.
It'd be nice if he actually did the action behind the speech, too, but...
Well, did you see the unintended comments around the open mic thing earlier today?
I heard there was some, but I didn't hear directly what they were.
I don't know. I guess they were trying to George Bush him and trying to get him to say booger around an open mic. You know, George was always good for that. But basically, he said, you know, I told him, you know, if you want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, by God, bring a separate bill, and I'm ready to have that fight. You know, maybe that sounded like it was prepared for public consumption, but you know. That's me being paranoid.
Nothing wrong with that to me.
Me either. But the con is, and I got an email from our buddy Gary in Maryland last night. He just titled the email "The Return of the Jedi," and was talking about the fact that I'm sure you saw the story, Andy, about the CBO numbers, saying that what they actually cut was $312 million instead of $38 billion. And that, you know, maybe the Republicans had been outmaneuvered by Obama.
In Ryan's figures that he had, I know Krugman.
No. The so-called $38 billion cut deal.
Yeah.
That was, you know, the continuing resolution. That the real world number was something more like $300 million. And that the rest of the cuts were coming out of money that hadn't been spent yet. money that was not going to be spent because the program was already done and it was overallocated. And apparently it proved a little bit uncomfortable for John Boehner, because all he could do was turn a little more orange today and say into a microphone, well, as far as I'm concerned, a cut is a cut. So maybe using that word that Reverbo has brought so prominently into the parlance this evening, you know, maybe Boehner got chumped. Maybe Obama was ahead of him on this. But the Republicans were so pissed off, Andy, that they went back to the CBO and said, no, we want a better analysis than this. And so they came back and said, okay, you want the better analysis? All right, you cut $31 billion. But they still can't get it up to that $8 billion. So maybe, you know, maybe they got had. And maybe that's not a good thing for Boehner.
Oh, the teabaggers aren't going to be happy.
Oh, the teabaggers are pissed. You know, there were 59 Republicans who defected from that vote yesterday.
Right.
And most of them, well, almost all of them were teabaggers. A lot of, you know, some Democrats voted against it, but, you know, in the main, it was hold your nose and vote.
Right. I did hear there was some funding left over from the stimulus package, I think, and there were some other programs that never got spent that, like you were saying, that was money that he had earmarked for the this part of that discretionary amount that I guess is kind of a weird category of money because it's not really spent money.
Well, and I guess accounting inside Washington, D.C. is, shall we say, fluid. I'll leave that to your expertise more than any that I don't have.
Right.
That's more in your bailiwick.
Right. I just wanted to say it did bother me to see how many different progressives out there were just hailing that speech that he gave. And I'll tell you the truth. I can't believe a word he says, because he has proven that whatever he says doesn't mean anything because the actions have not been there.
Well, what scares me is that
it fooled again.
Yeah, and see, I'm jaded that way too, Andy.
Yeah, I can't believe a word he says. It rings hollow with me, man.
Well, see, I'm not to the place where I don't believe a word he says. I think when he says it, he means it. But what he has done, and this is an issue not about personality or morality or ethics or anything. This is about knowing how to negotiate.
And he's proven no skills.
What he did in that speech. Ever. Yeah, what he did in that speech, Andy, was he set out exactly where he stands.
Right. And you don't want to do that. You want to extend yourself and shoot for stuff that you know there's no way you're going to get to, but at least you can maybe get to the middle, and at worst case, you get what you did want.
Right. Like, in other words, where Obama needs to be at the end of the debate over the Ryan budget versus whatever, where he wants to end up is where he is the ground that he staked out 2 days ago.
Right, exactly.
If you get my meaning.
And there's only one place to go, but down from there.
Right.
He is not going to push it. He's not going to push it to give more for our progressive point of view.
But by the same token, the response from the right wing has been delightfully interesting. Because
I didn't like that speech at all, man.
Well, no,
they're not happy.
No, and they had hissies. my favorite right wing hissy about the speech was, "How dare he? He invited Paul Ryan into that speech and put him on the front row, and then stood there and insulted him. That is not acceptable." Now, meanwhile, Addison, whose name is not really Joe Wilson from South Carolina, can sit in the gallery of the State of the Union and scream, "You lie," at the President of the United States, and the right wing's okay with that, and they fundraise on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he got a lot of money over that one.
And a seat as sitting justice of the Supreme Court of the United States can mouth the words, "That's not so," when the President of the United States talks about the pernicious effects of Citizens United. But if you tell a man to his face that you disagree with his plan, oh, that's a, and the other part of that whole bit of hissy having that was funny was, Well, did you hear that? Did you hear that? He said Paul Ryan is un-American. Because, you know, what Obama said was, that's not the America I believe in. That's not America.
The words that come to mind when I think of Paul Ryan are snake oil salesman, charlatan, carnival barker, a guy who just spouts out things. And I don't. Does the guy even have a college education?
Yes, he does, because that's what comes to my mind, con man. When Paul Ryan was a teenager, and it's a very sad story, when Paul Ryan was a teenager, his dad keeled over dead and threw his family into chaos. But lucky for Paul,
saved them.
Lucky for Paul Ryan, Social Security survivors benefits were there for him, and Paul Ryan took all of his survivors benefits and stashed them away, and he went to college on them and government funding programs.
Sounds like another Clarence Thomas, a great beneficiary of a safety net, a system with a safety net.
Maybe that's what
nobody else is supposed to participate in it, right?
Maybe that's what Paul Ryan is. Clarence Thomas with everything but the Coke can.
Yeah. That's sad. Another issue I wanted to bring up to completely different, if I may.
Go right ahead.
There's a race going on in California's 36th district in Southern California. It's along the coast. There used to be a woman there, which you probably have heard of, named Jane Harman.
Yes.
Who ran that seat. She recently said she wasn't going to run again. There is a woman who ran against her twice, and I think she is the greatest progressive that I've ever seen, and I've seen her speak in person, and I've given a lot of campaign money to her, because I think if anybody I've seen in politics who lines up with my point of view, it is a woman named Marcy Winograd.
Yes, I am familiar with her.
Jane Harman twice. And I think she got between 30% and 40%. I think she got 38% of the vote in the primary one time. I think she might have broken 40. She was close to 40% of all the Democratic vote. But you did a great job in a district that's really tough, going against, you know, a DLCer. And again, you know, removing a sitting House member is more difficult than removing somebody from the Politburo in Russia.
Which is the absolute truth, yes.
I mean, there's no question about it. And all the DLCers definitely found Ms. Harman, big time. And the one guy who did in particular that supported Harman like crazy was Henry Waxman.
Yes. And I mean, she was as blue doggy as blue doggy can be.
Right. And Henry Waxman leaves a lot to be desired also. But anyway, Jane Harman is the blue dog of all blue dogs. You know, when you look up blue dog in the dictionary, that's who you get. You know, Harman Kardon, the stereo, that was her husband that invented that stereo system. So they were, needless to say, very well off. But anyway.
Yeah, Ron and Raleigh just noted that, as a matter of trivia, Jane Harman is the wealthiest member of Congress.
Right. She had more Goldman Sachs stock than anybody in Congress, I know, too. So a little conflict of interest there, wouldn't you think?
One would.
One would definitely think. But anyway, there's a race going on for the 36, and Marcy's going to try her third shot at that. And who decides to come into the race but a woman named Deborah Bowen, who is now the Secretary of State, who just got elected in January to a four-year term. She's got 4 years going as Secretary of State. And she decides to run for the third. And she's a very good progressive. I've campaigned for her myself. Howard Dean is behind her. Jim Dean is behind her. And they're pushing her in that seat. But that irritates the heck out of me. Here she's got a job already. We need her as Secretary of State with all the electronic voting machine stuff, which she's an expert on in the vote. She's done a great job. And now she's going to jump in that race and probably take that seat from Marcy. And you talk about the unfairness.
Andy, is that because there is a perception out there that because Marcy Winograd's credentials are really, no kidding,
progressive liberal.
Real, you know, all the way
real.
To the bone.
This is a real, real liberal, a real woman of the people. Somebody who was a high school English teacher. as her job. No,
but is there a conviction
like Deborah Bowen and a party? I don't want to say a party hack, but definitely earned her spurs working through the whole party and knows all the mucky mucks all the way up there. And they know she's a commodity that you can count on not to upset the old apple cart, where you know Marcy Winograd would get the job done and tell some of those blue dog pieces of crap to go stick big time. You know she would. But they want
By comparison, look at how much help Alan Grayson got outside of his grassroots support.
Nothing, right? Probably nothing, right?
I think within the political among the political mandarins, there's this notion that okay, yeah, we want liberal, okay, we want progressive, but we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. We don't want anybody out there screaming that the house is on fire. We can't do that.
Right.
And based on your description, this is the sense I get. Because I too was of the understanding that Deborah Bowen has good progressive credentials. I was glad when she was elected Secretary of State out there.
And she's got 4 years to go.
And knowing what the shenanigans are going to be in 2012 in a state like California by the GOP, you've got to have a real eagle eye in that seat.
Exactly. You know what they do? The Democrats always screw up when they do that. Like Obama pulling Napolitano out of Arizona, and look what happens.
Yeah. Hello, Jan Brewer.
This plot, right? And you hate to see you got a safe position, you got a great progressive in there, and then you're going to pull her out, and you're going to take your chances that another Democrat gets elected to that position that actually knows something about electronic voting machines. Oh, please, you stupid idiots!
I mean, look at the party. You know, if we need any further reminder that there are ongoing problems with video game voting. Just look at Wisconsin. Look at Waukesha.
Look at Wisconsin.
Now they are going back and examining every election that the clerk Nicholas has been involved in for the last 5 years. That's how dummied up that county's elections have been.
Right. She's just a GOP hack. She probably couldn't do anything else in life except for that particular.
She's Catherine Harris in a parka.
Right, the patronage position just handed down to somebody that they know is going to do the bidding of the party, period. Period. And the way they had the non-transparency there. I heard Brad Friedman talk about that a lot, too. And he doesn't really think in this particular situation it was because the newspapers got it right and this Nicholas got it wrong. But the newspapers had the numbers that night of Brookville, the 14,000 votes. They had it counted. So I think she's just an idiot.
That's what she's pleading. She's pleading I'm stupid.
Right. But that's pretty stupid.
the third largest
municipality in the district, and you wouldn't have the numbers in. Please.
And by the way, Marty out there, roughly in the same neck of the wood as you, notes that with Bowen in the Secretary of State office, he says, the problem is this state has term limits for statewide office. Bowen's current term as Secretary of State is her last. He says, not trying to excuse her running for the seat, I too favor Winograd.
Right. I agree totally. I agree totally. It just makes no sense to me that she'd be running for that seat.
But if you don't want to retire, and if you're not running while still in office or with your name fresh in the people's memory, it's awfully hard to get the traction that you need. Maybe it's an explanation as simple as that. Maybe
it's an opportunistic move. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, if you
expected Harmon probably to give up the seat.
Right, and if you want to be a professional politician,
which appears like that's what she wants to do,
because there are not a lot of people left in the political class in this country who hew to the words of Benjamin Franklin that leaving public service is actually a promotion.
Yeah.
Because then you go from being a servant to the boss.
Right. Just as a point of fairness, though, for a person like Marcy Winograd, who ran hard for that seat facing an uphill battle, you know, like the little train that could, given it all she had, and going for her third try, where now she doesn't have Jane Harmon. It's a completely open seat. And a Democrat's going to win. It's a Democratic district. There's no doubt. It's whoever wins the Democratic primary that's going to win the seat. And here the Dems go in for it. This is, again, screwing the liberals in the party, screwing the progressives once again by the Democratic Party. And, man, I'll tell you, next ballot I get, there's no question, I am so sick, and I'm so sick of Obama. I'm just going green, green, green party, green party. I don't care what. I'm done. I'm done for a while. Unless I see a real progressive again, any Democrats, I am done with. Over.
Well, I understand the sensation. I can't say that I share it, but I understand it.
Right.
I'm at a place where on any given ballot that I go to vote on in my little polling place here, I wind up leaving a lot of stuff blank.
Right.
Because, you know, I can't vote for a guy who goes to the House of Representatives and actively campaigns against my family's well-being and still is a Democrat. Can't do that. And I can't do that for senators who do the same thing. I can't vote for, you know, I just won't. I will not vote for pro-coal anybody. So if I go and I vote for a couple of people that I've identified as being tolerable, then, you know, hopefully the non-votes down ballot matter. You know, I went and I voted for Barack Obama in the primary in 2008 in West Virginia just because I wanted to be one less vote of the stomping that I knew that the white folks in this state were going to give him.
Right.
I felt like I kind of owed it to him. In many ways, he has never manifested any sense of obligation back, however.
No, not one iota bit at all. He seems to have had his allegiance to the other side for some reason, and the people that didn't vote for him, which totally is a joke.
Because it's still, like, you know, it still rings in my mind after the Upper Big Branch disaster a year ago when he came down here for the memorial service for the 29 fallen miners and literally repeated the West Virginia Coal Association's advertising slogan,
clean coal,
for them.
Clean coal.
No. We have to remember that coal keeps the lights on. And I was watching the television at the time, and, you know, it was almost lost another TV.
You know, I heard...
And then the following Monday, this is the best part, Andy, the following Monday, the National Mining Association came out with a press release and said, Barack Obama has parked his tanks on mining's lawn.
And he couldn't do more than bend over backwards for these morons.
Yeah.
Incredible. By the being the facilitator. That's the problem. He's always the facilitator. He facilitates the message. He might not be inventing the message, but he keeps on giving the message of the other side and endorsing it. It's an amazing thing to me. I heard somebody say the other day on a talk show, this is Kennedy. We got another Kennedy in the White House. Obama is just like John F. Kennedy. Yeah, you know, John F. Kennedy wrote this memorandum, 267 or 230 or something like that, to get us out of the Vietnam War in 1963. A couple months after that, he got his head blown off. See, that's what a John F. Kennedy does, my dear. The woman who called him a Kennedy. A Kennedy does things that the defense industrial complex just does not like. And when the defense and the oligarchy, you do something they don't like, they will kill you. If Obama was really a John F. Kennedy, he'd have got us out of Afghanistan and Iraq, and we wouldn't be probably rolling around in Libya that I know we disagree on. But
but let's remember about it, the thing. Especially where Afghanistan is concerned, I think we would do well as liberals, progressives, whatever we're, you know, tattooing on our hide lately, to remember that, you know, it's another one of those cases of us imposing stuff on Obama that maybe he wasn't in the first place. And I think we have to be cognizant of that, Andy, because, among other things, when he was campaigning, when he was still in the primary process, he said, Afghanistan is the right war. And so I knew right then and there, you know, he might be talking about getting out of Iraq, but he had this notion in his head that there was a good reason to be in Afghanistan.
I agree with you 100%, Bob. I'll tell you, I did not give Obama any money. I kept telling people, this guy is going to disappoint you. He's going to disappoint you. And I had a problem when I went to the voting booth, whether to vote for Nader, or was I going to vote green for Nader, or was I, or Nader wasn't green, actually. But I could have voted for the green candidate, I forget who she was, and Nader, and Obama. But I thought my area where I lived, there was such a bunch of morons in New Jersey who elected Chris Christie, that I couldn't be assured that these idiots would elect Obama carry that state. So that's the only reason I even voted for Obama. But otherwise, it was a hold your nose, because I had no reservations.
But Andy, I think at this point in time, we also have to take into consideration that no matter who runs in the grand scheme of one of these two people will be president, no matter who runs is going to disappoint us. Because that's just because of the nature of our system. It is broken. It shows no sign of ever being fixed within our lifetime or any to be reasonably foreseeable in the next two or three generations. We are going to be disappointed because our political system breeds disappointing candidates. It's like a lot of the stuff that was inside that Chris Hedges lecture last week.
Right. It breeds status quo. It does not breed change. And that kills me, too, is I don't hear people talking about what's gone on in Germany lately. And in one of the most conservative areas of Germany, I think it's in the southwest, I forget what it's called down there, it's the Stuttgart Schwabish Hall area. I'm trying to think of what the name of it is, but now I can't. But the Greens in there were supposed to get like less than 20% of the vote, and they've usually never done very well. Merkel's party has always done fairly well, and the more center-right Christian Democrats have done well there. But the Greens took 25% of the vote. They blew it open in that particular section of Germany. They had never gotten like over 18 or 19%. They got 25%. They took over the whole southwestern part of Germany. They are now the lead party there. God, you don't hear that here. And one of the major reasons they did that was because of what happened in Japan with the nuclear power, because the Greens have always been get rid of the nukes. Get rid of them. They're gone. And they've always had that policy, and the people finally got it, that we're going green. But you don't hear that here. You don't even hear that voice that the Greens actually took over and had the biggest win in their history and took Merkel's party out.
Well, but if you heard that here, if it was covered in for-profit media news, it would by definition have to be analyzed, and frankly there's no way to spin something that like that away from the essential facts of what drove it. It's kind of like what I was saying earlier about you know, how did we lose the House of Representatives in 2010? Well, we lost it not because all of the really good liberal progressives in the House got voted out. They didn't.
Right.
It's because the phony baloney imitation Republicans got voted out.
Right. The Rahm Emanuel's gang of creeps.
And the for-profit media couldn't even comprehend that.
It was all Rahm Emanuel's gangsters.
Yeah, and because none of that, you know, that didn't, to point that out, didn't fit within their theme of America is tired of Democrats. And by the way, Marty wrote in again and he says, tell Andy that I'm quite offended that he cannot remember the name Cynthia McKinney.
Right.
The Green candidate.
Well, I don't think it was actually Cynthia McKinney was the candidate before the prior election. Before, I think it was a woman from New York who ran with somebody.
Okay. Well, somebody will have the answer. Hey, Andy, it's been good talking to you, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Yeah. Can I say one other thing?
Sure.
You asked me one time, and I always want to get back to you, about whether I trusted the markets or not. And I want to just say one thing, and Sandra has mentioned the same point. People have to remember that they tried to go to mark-to-market accounting in this country, where what's on the books, anything a bank or a financial company owned, was done market-to-market. You had to be able to get a price in the market. But they found out that you couldn't get prices for things, and the market was so decimated that you couldn't find a decent price. So they decided about a year ago, or 2 years ago to change to fair value accounting, where you actually make up the numbers. All of a sudden, everything got better. All the banks got healthy. All the capitalizations were okay because we went to fair value accounting, where you make up the number. You'd use models, or you used a mark to magic, they call it.
Right, models like we use climate models to predict global climate catastrophe, but those models don't work, and yet the magic value models do, right?
And they've done that to value the instruments that they have on their books so they can get their capitalization numbers using models instead of using what actually somebody would pay for it in the market. This is why I don't trust the market, because you don't know what's really on the books, especially of the financial companies. All right? That's just my comment. Oh, also, UK Uncut, or the US Uncut people, get out in front of those banks on Monday if you have a chance. I did it yesterday. I was in front of a B of A bank for 2 hours with about 60, 70 patriots trying to inform the public that these banks are not paying taxes, man. You've got to break them up, and you got to make them pay taxes.
Hear, hear. Andy, thank you very kindly.
Message.
All right.
Hey, take care of yourself. Thanks for letting me talk.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care, Andy. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And, by the way, before going on to this next, probably last call, an important news report out of North Dakota. There has been a catastrophic wind accident. There's been a catastrophic wind turbine accident. Texas Betsy clued me into this. High winds swept across North Dakota, and a wind turbine went absolutely wild and finally broke. Folks on the ground are saying that it was a catastrophic failure of oversight and human error. Scientists say it is unavoidable. And the wind turbine fell off of its mount. Damage estimates indicate that casualties thus far are a wide swath of grass and a possible dead family of voles. What? No radiation leaks? No Geiger counters going wild? No ooze spreading across the face of the North Dakota high prairie? No. Just a broken wind turbine laying on the ground. And so it goes. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Oh, my God. I'm still laughing at that conversation with Reverbo, because he's talking about blue, but I just had a vision of when he was 15 and he realized he liked women. You know, first of all, I hear, bless him. You know, I love the conversation, but...
It was a beautiful thing, and... You know, I'm not trying to work the blue side of the alley. I'm really not. This is just, you know, what the universe hands me.
Well, no, but you know, I love it that we need to confirm the heterosexuality. That's fantastic. that's why I was like, thank you. And like I said, all the women out there is thanking him. Shit.
Mark this day on your calendar.
Oh, God. Hey, so... yeah, I was just calling because I just thought the, you know, the Kobe Bryant thing is quite amusing. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Weren't we due for a sighting?
Well, I just, you know, I sort of, how much do they charge, dude? It's like, well, I thought, well, wait a minute. Well, you know, what about, it's a lot of money, $150,000 or something crazy?
Yeah, that would be, yeah, $100,000.
And then I looked at the story and I looked at the picture. I said, "Oh no, homeboy looked pretty manly to me." I wanted to see if he had some sugar in his tank, the guy he was talking to, but no. So I don't know what Kobe was talking about. Listen, I'm being facetious. I guess he lost his mind there for a minute.
I guess I don't know what's inside his head. You know, there are very specific rules about thou shalt not touch the referee.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand he's a star, but I mean, beyond what he said, it's like, you know, come on, you know what I mean?
It was.
You can be called a technical. I understand you're, you know, gold, but let's get real. Anyway, I just and you.
Well, I love the statement afterward. My actions were out of frustration during the heat of the game. Period. The words expressed do not reflect my feelings toward the gay and lesbian communities, and were not meant to offend anyone.
Yeah, I mean, it just sort of rings hollow because it's like, oh, what, another homophobe in professional sports? Shocking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. why am I suddenly reminded? He's dead now. Played football, big guy. Oh, what was his?
Reggie White.
Yeah, Reggie.
He went off the deep end with the homophobia too, right? No, I don't really think Kobe. I'm not really, buying some sort of deep set homophobia. I just think it's just, they just.
I think I know where you're going, Sandra, because it's not. It's not because he thought the guy was.
Right.
It's because it's still okay in this culture to use that, or that qualifies, that kind of a slur still qualifies in this culture as the slurriest form of slur.
Yeah, and it's a challenge, it's still viewed as a, you're challenging, somebody's masculinity. I mean, it seems to be that base, that's how I'm taking it. And I don't know if there's been, has there been outrage in the various
Yeah, there's outrage. Yeah, the gay community is pretty disgusted.
But
by the same token, that disgust should only happen if it's coming from some, if Elton John called the guy with the baton, the conductor of the orchestra behind him, something like that, there should be some shock and some outrage because you really don't expect that from Elton John. But when Kobe does it, or Eminem, or the kids in play yards here in West Virginia, hell, they're doing that because the culture in which they came up has told them that when you're really mad and you really want to insult somebody, you tell them that they have sex with people from their same gender.
Well, and also, I'm pretty sure at this point, the gay community is just sort of sick of it, just like any other community that's berated and vilified. So I don't, I certainly can appreciate the sentiment. I just was sort of, laughing at, his backpedaling and how he don't have any problems with gays. Well, it's like, dude, why are you saying shit like that then? You see what I'm saying? It's like, no, that don't make no sense. And I just envisioned Colorado and how he likes to do it in the butt, and because
that all kind of came out back then, didn't it?
I don't care if I talked about it either. I know it's crude on the phone, but that guy said that's my thing. I'm like, ooh, well, poor chick, first of all.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's your thing. You're a fucking freak. And back to Jim, I don't mean freak. I do mean a freak for him and negatively, but with Montgomery Cliff? No, that's a term of endearment. So
right.
I want to clarify that. It can be, just in case. Because, I'm not, I like that actor a lot. So, anywho, I have to send you that thing with the, oopsie, I'm talking and I sound like I got some balls and the election started. You see what I'm saying? I'm not buying.
Right, but do you see what I was saying with Andy about how there was an element of, because George Bush got caught doing that two or three times, didn't he?
Oh, it was like sort of nonstop with that guy, right? Yeah.
Where he would always use the fun, Serial Mom, that movie. The line was, I hate the brown word. but you could always count on George. Maybe if you've been raised by Barbara Bush, you just talk like that. Barack Obama, this business of, sounding tough when you think you're off mic, it's got a little bit of campaign flavoring to it.
I just thought, oh no, let's not, and say we did, what I'm saying? It was just really, it just made me cringe, and I just thought. And then I saw different blogs kind of falling for it, and, he's not going to let them touch his legacy and going on. I'm like, you guys are doing too much. You know what I mean? Because,
put down the pipe and step away from the Cheetos.
Yeah, no, it was crazy. And plus, all these progressives, you know, us or whatever, man, lost their minds and now with Obama. You know, oh, you know, it's really going overboard. And it's like, hello? He said he wasn't going to raise the taxes. We've heard that before. I don't believe any of it. I'm with Andy.
Well, see, I go back to Reagan land, as I mentioned earlier, and I remember in the talks with the Soviets when Ronnie would come out and some member of his staff had gotten an inartful translation of a Russian phrase that's, and he'd say, well, and there's an old Russian proverb that says, and then he would say the Russian words poorly, and that means trust but verify. And that's kind of where I am with Barack Obama right now. Okay, trust but verify.
Yeah, no, for sure. And also, I mean, you know, people are going on about the speech and all this sort of stuff, but, you know, I'm stuck in the idea that this Congress has just passed a stepping stone to completely obliterating, you know, the health care that's promised to everyone when they get a certain age in this country. And I have to add, once again, historical amnesia. Why did they get the damn program in the first place, Bob? Because the private insurers wouldn't touch old people. I mean, hello?
And there are so many examples of that, and I know there's a whole lot of space between old folks not being able to go to the doctor and me not being able to turn on the lights, but it's the same thing over and over again. You know, back when the electrification of this country was taking place, the big power conglomerates didn't want, you know, it's not profitable for us to take power out into the country.
Right.
So the government said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to have the Rural Electrification Act, and we're going to do it ourselves. And all of a sudden, the power companies went, wait a minute. And it's the same thing that motivated the creation of Medicaid and Medicare.
Right. No, and it's just kind of, to look at this, I'm just sort of stunned. But, and also what's really funny is the thin-skinnedness of these Republicans. That little bit of pushback, I mean, tiny pushback that Obama did, these people are losing their minds.
Oh, I thought I thought Morning Joe was going to cry. Hey, Sandra, I'm sorry this came up so short, but I got to get out of here.
That's fine.
All right.
Okay, have a good weekend.
Back to your paper.
Yeah, bye.
Bye. It is time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for a wonderful weekend. Remember, we're trying to hastily finish up some fundraising for the first half of the month of April. Thanks to everybody who has contributed in that regard. Have a great weekend, everyone. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.